So here's President Obama speaking last week in Cairo, and you decide, is this nuts and bolts politics or a little bit of symbolism as he's speaking here?
It was Islam at places like Uluzar that carried the light of learning through so many centuries, paving the way for Europe's Renaissance and Enlightenment.
President Obama speaking about history, but the question for today is Islam a path that could light the regions that are so filled with instability and focused as part of the so-called war on terror? Could Islam light the way out of confrontation between places like the United States and the Taliban in Pakistan? It's something that got Christine Fair, a good friend of this program from the RAND Corporation, thinking. She co-wrote an article about madrasas, the education institutions, the schools in Pakistan that are so famous for breeding terrorism, as a possible infrastructure to actually assist in the development of a nation like Pakistan. Christine Fair joins us from Alexandria, Virginia. Good morning, Christine.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Now, we've heard all sorts of things about madrasas, the schools that so-called indoctrinate people as weapons of mass instruction, give them a view of the Quran, but little else. But in your article, you suggest that, in fact, madrasas are an infrastructure that represent a possible opportunity for the Obama administration. Explain.
Well, actually, the article doesn't exactly make that argument. I mean, we basically find in our data that there is this misconception that madrasas are one of the most possible educational opportunities for poor children. We don't find that at all. We actually find that madrasa attendance accounts for something at most 1 to 3% of all students that are enrolled full-time in Pakistan. So this idea that Pakistan is chock full of madrasas and that madrasas are the school of last resort, we just find to be false. We actually argue that the most interesting educational opportunity in Pakistan for the United States and the international donor community to have an influence is actually private schools. Private schools are usually thought of as being elite here in the United States, but in Pakistan, private schools are actually more cost-effective than public schools. We find that the madrasa infrastructure is just too difficult to influence. So even though a small number of madrasas are likely producing terrorism, we argue that that's really a law enforcement and intelligence problem, not a driver of educational policy. And so we basically come down in our article to suggesting that the Ministry of Education is too difficult to influence, madrasas are impossible to influence, and therefore where the U.S. and the international donor community should invest its resources is really Pakistan's private schools.
All right, Christine, listen to this, one of the few really straightforward programmatic statements that the president made in Cairo last week, and let's see if it relates to what you're talking about in your article. Hold on.
We also know that military power alone is not going to solve the problems in Afghanistan and Pakistan. That's why we plan to invest $1.5 billion each year over the next 5 years to partner with Pakistanis to build schools and hospitals, roads and businesses, and hundreds of millions to help those who've been displaced.
$1.5 billion. Do you suggest that that money should go not to alternatives to madrasas, because as you say, they're a small infrastructure in Pakistan, but to these private schools and to bolster their educational value inside Pakistan?
Well, unfortunately, my experience has been talking to folks in the U.S. government is that it's very difficult for them to deal with the private sector. And part of it is the requirement to deal with the federal government of Pakistan. And this is a huge opportunity lost. I mean, as it is the $100 million, which is not an enormous sum, that the United States already gave to Pakistan for educational reform was, quote, can't be found by an aid official that was speaking on this issue. So the problem with Pakistan is not that there's not enough schools per se. In fact, you've got many schools in Pakistan that are called ghost schools, schools that exist on paper. And in fact, there is a building there. But because of the corruption, basically you have people drawing salaries as teachers when in fact there's no teaching going on. So part of the problem with education in Pakistan is, like every other public sector, is absolutely riven with corruption. So we're arguing that the United States and the other donors needs to be a little bit more creative than they've been in the past. If you actually want to deliver a benefit, you're probably not going to get there through dealing with the public educational system, but rather these private schools, which are much more responsive to parental preferences. They can link compensation to quality performance. And most importantly, they can fire teachers who don't show up. And as a consequence, teachers are more likely to show up in private schools than they are in public schools.
So is the takeaway here focus not so much on madrasas because they're not as significant as the sort of mythology would lead us to believe. Corruption is a bigger danger, a bigger threat to education in Pakistan than even Islam. And to try to find a more creative way of spending money in the educational sector.
I think that's the bottom line. Now, we don't want to give the illusion that all madrasas are innocent, but we also want to say very clearly that they are a very small number. And of that small number, a smaller number yet are actually involved in the production of terrorism. And that, of course, is a law enforcement challenge, not a driver of educational policy.
All right. You can read the details in this month's Foreign Policy. Christine Fair wrote the article. She's co-wrote the article. She's an expert at the RAND Corporation talking about madrasas and their over-significance in U.S. foreign policy. Christine Fair, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.